With considerable effort, Laura raised herself up just enough to see who it was that was making her already abominable headache even worse. Freddy. By the time Laura had struggled to a sitting position, he was standing over her, stony-faced, holding a mug of steaming black coffee. Laura clutched a blanket tightly around her aching body as Freddy registered the two wine glasses, the empty bottles, and Laura's state of dishevelment.
"I see your date went well."
His tone was just a little more clipped than usual. Laura took the coffee from him and muttered something unintelligible.
"Sunshine said that you were going out with your boyfriend."
Laura sipped her coffee and shuddered.
"He's not my boyfriend," she rasped.
Freddy raised his eyebrows at her.
"Well, it looks as though things got pretty friendly to me."
Laura's eyes filled with tears, but her belly filled with anger.
"What the hell's it got to do with you anyway?" she snapped.
Freddy shrugged.
"You're right. It's none of my business."
He turned to go.
"And thanks for the coffee, Fred," he muttered.
"Oh, bugger off," Laura replied, just about under her breath.
She took another sip from her mug. Why in God's name had she told Sunshine about her date? Laura could feel the warning rush of saliva in her mouth. She knew she wouldn't make it to the bathroom, but it would be rude not to try. Halfway across the parquet floor, she was sick, very sick. As she stood cold and miserable with vomit-splashed legs and still clutching the mug of coffee, she was glad that at least she'd missed the Persian rug. An hour later, having cleared up the mess, been sick twice more, stood under the shower for 10 minutes and dragged on some clothes, Laura sat at the kitchen table nursing a cup of tea and staring at a piece of dry toast. Her date had ended in disaster. The memory of Graham's tongue squirming lethargically in her mouth, like the death throes of a particularly wet slug, brought her out in a cold sweat. Well, that and the aftermath of 2 bottles of fizz. How could she have been such a fool? The sound of the doorbell pierced her mournful reverie. Sunshine. "Oh, God, no, please not today," she thought. There would be endless questions about last night, and she just couldn't face it. She hid in the pantry. Sunshine would eventually come round to the back door if her ringing went unanswered, and if Laura stayed where she was, slumped at the table, Sunshine would see her. The ringing continued, patient and persistent, and then the back door opened and Freddy walked in.
"What on earth are you doing?"
Laura frantically shushed him and beckoned him over to the pantry. Even such a slight activity caused her temples to throb. She held onto one of the shelves loaded with ancient jars of pickles to steady herself.
"God, you look rough," said Freddy helpfully.
Again, Laura put her finger to her lips.
"What?"
He was beginning to lose his patience. Laura sighed.
"Sunshine's at the front door, and I really can't face her today. I know you probably think I'm being pathetic, but I just can't cope with all her questions. Not today."
Freddy shook his head scornfully.
"I don't think it's pathetic. I think it's just plain mean. You're a grown woman hiding in a cupboard from a young girl who thinks you're great and loves your company. Just because you've got a stonking and probably well-deserved hangover, at least have the guts to go and make your excuses to her face."
Freddy's words stung like nettles on bare flesh. But before Laura could reply, the mood at the front door suddenly turned nasty. Sunshine had no idea who the blonde woman was marching up the path, but she looked pretty cross.
"Hello, I'm Sunshine. I'm the friend to Laura. Who are you?"
The woman narrowed her eyes as she looked Sunshine up and down, trying to decide whether or not she was obliged to answer.
"Is Freddo here?" she demanded.
"Nope,"
said Sunshine.
"Are you sure? Because that's his fucking Land Rover on the drive."
Sunshine watched with interest as the woman grew redder and crosser and began jabbing the doorbell with her immaculately manicured finger.
"That's Freddy's fucking Land Rover," she replied calmly. So he is here then, the arsing asshole, the woman spat.
She jabbed at the doorbell again and banged on the door with her fist.
She won't answer, said Sunshine. She's probably hiding.
Felicity stopped banging for a moment.
Who is?
Laura.
What? That funny housekeeping woman? Why in God's name would she be hiding?
From me, Sunshine replied with a sad smile.
Well, that bloody sodding shit of an asshole, Freddo, better not be hiding from me.
Sunshine decided to try and be helpful. The blonde woman was looking really furious now, and Sunshine was worried that she might break the doorbell.
Perhaps he's hiding with Laura, she suggested. He really likes her, she added.
Sunshine's words didn't seem to help as much as she had hoped.
You mean, the bastard's probably humping the help?
The woman crouched down and began yelling through the letterbox. Freddy shoved his way into the pantry beside Laura and pulled the door to behind him. It was Laura's turn to raise her eyebrows.
It's Felicity, he hissed.
The scorn had disappeared entirely from his voice, to be replaced by an edge of desperation.
And?
It was Freddy's turn to sigh.
We had a date last night, except I couldn't go. But I didn't exactly tell her until it was too late, and I guess she's pretty pissed off.
He trailed off lamely. Despite being cold, feeling sick, and with a head that was about to explode, Laura couldn't help but smile. Her next words were delivered with as much relish as crammed the shelves that she was leaning against.
Well, at least have the guts to go and make your excuses to her face.
Freddy looked at her, astonished, and then his handsome face broke into a lopsided grin.
I know you're in there, you bastard!
Felicity's voice shrieked through the letterbox.
You and that tart of a housekeeper! Well, if that dried-up, scruffy old bag lady is the best you can do, you were clearly punching well above your weight with me. You were crap in the sack, anyway. She's welcome to you!
Sunshine stood next to the incandescent Felicity, uncertain how to proceed. She had taken in all the words that had been spoken, or rather yelled, and was hoping to make some kind of sense of them later. Perhaps when Laura had stopped hiding, she would help her. Felicity appeared to have run out of steam. She gave the front door a parting thump and strode off the way she'd come. Moments later, Sunshine heard a car door slam, an engine rev, and tyres squeal as Felicity took her leave in a foul temper, leaving a good deal of rubber on the tarmac. Just as Sunshine was about to go home, another visitor arrived. This woman was older, smartly dressed, and smiling.
Hello, she said. Does Laura live here?
Sunshine wondered what this one was going to do.
Yes, but she's probably hiding.
The woman didn't seem at all surprised.
I'm Sarah, she introduced herself. I'm an old friend of Laura's.
Sunshine offered her a high five.
I'm Sunshine. I'm the new friend to Laura.
Well, I'm sure she's very lucky to have you, the woman replied.
Sunshine liked this new woman.
Are you going to yell through the letterbox too? She asked her.
Sarah pondered a moment.
Well, I thought I might just try the doorbell.
Sunshine was hungry. It didn't look like she was going to get any lunch at Padua today.
Good luck, she wished Sarah,
before setting off for home. Freddy and Laura were still dithering in the pantry, straining their ears to hear if anyone remained at the front door. The doorbell rang again, a single sound followed by a polite pause. Laura retreated back into the pickles.
You go, she pleaded with Freddy, please.
Freddy relented, fueled by remorse about the insults Felicity had aimed at Laura. He opened the door to an attractive middle-aged brunette with a confident smile and a firm handshake.
Hello, I'm Sarah. Can I see Laura?
Freddy stood back to let her in.
You can,
if she comes out from hiding in the pantry.
At the sound of Sarah's voice, Laura hurried into the hall to meet her.
You were hiding in there too, she reminded Freddy.
Sarah looked at them both and winked at Laura. Hiding in the pantry? Now that's a euphemism if ever I heard one.
Not a chance.
Freddy's answer was a knee-jerk, but a kick in the teeth nonetheless for Laura. Sarah, as usual, saw what was required. She took Laura by the arm. Why don't you make me a lovely cup of tea? And by the way, your hair looks gorgeous.
Chapter 25 Sarah Trouvet was a first-class barrister with a stellar career, two healthy, rambunctious young boys, and a rugged architect husband. She also had an unexpected talent for yodeling, which had earned her extravagant plaudits as Maria in the school production of The Sound of Music. She and Laura had met at school and remained close friends ever since. Not close in terms of geography or frequent meetings, they rarely saw or spoke to each other more than two or three times a year. But the bond between them formed at an early age and tempered over time by triumphs and tragedies remained as durable as it was dependable. Sarah had witnessed the bright, sparky, dauntless young Laura gradually, relentlessly diluted by a bad marriage and a barrage of self-doubt. But she had never given up hope that one day the real Laura would re-emerge victorious in glorious, shining technicolor. "What on earth are you doing here?" Laura asked as she filled the kettle. "Well, the six very drunken and virtually unintelligible messages which you left on my voicemail in the early hours of this morning might have had something to do with it." "Oh, God, I didn't, did I?" Laura hid her face in her hands. "You most certainly did. And now I want to hear all about it, every last sordid detail." And I think we'll begin with poor Graham. Who the devil is poor Graham? Laura told her almost everything, beginning with the dress, which was still hanging half out of the bin, and ending with the sinking of the second bottle of Prosecco in front of the fire. The rest of the night, including the phone calls, had disappeared forever into alcohol-induced oblivion. Poor Graham. Sarah was now able to agree. Whatever made you agree to go out with him in the first place? Laura looked a little embarrassed. Oh, I don't know. Maybe just because he asked? Nobody else has. He always seemed nice enough. Nothing obviously wrong with him. Sarah shook her head in disbelief. Nothing wrong doesn't make him Mr. Right. Laura sighed. If only she could stop thinking about Mr. Wrong as Mr. Right. She hid her face in her hands again. Damn that ruddy gardener! She had said it out loud before she could stop herself. Who? Laura smiled ruefully. Oh, nothing. I'm just talking to myself. That's the first sign, you know. The first sign of what? The menopause. Laura threw a biscuit at her. I should have known it was never going to work when he started going on about Nordic walking. He was trying to impress you with his pole, Sarah spluttered with laughter, and even Laura couldn't stifle a guilty giggle. And then she told her about the kiss in the porch, that dreadful, interminable kiss. Sarah looked at her and shrugged her shoulders in exasperation. Well, what in God's name did you expect? You don't fancy him. You never have. It was always going to be like kissing cardboard. Laura shook her head emphatically. No, it was much, much worse. Cardboard would have been infinitely preferable. She remembered the slug with disgust. And a lot less wet. Honestly, Laura, why didn't you just offer your cheek? Or failing that, pull away a bit quicker. Laura's cheeks were blotched with laughter and embarrassment. I didn't want to be rude. And anyway, his lips locked onto my face like a lunar module docking. Sarah was helpless with mirth. Laura felt bad. Poor Graham. He didn't deserve to be ridiculed. She remembered the bewildered look on his face when she finally broke the suction between them and garbled her goodbye before fleeing inside the house and slamming the door behind her. Poor Graham. But that didn't mean that she ever wanted to see him again. Poor Graham, be damned. Sarah always had the uncanny ability to know what Laura was thinking. Sounds more like poor Laura to me. He's a bad kisser with a dodgy pole. Swill your mouth out and move on. Laura couldn't help smiling, but just as her spirits were beginning to lift, a memory knocked them down like a rogue breaker toppling a tentative paddler. Shit! She slumped forward in her chair, and once again buried her head in her hands. Sarah put down her cup of tea, ready for the next revelation.
Freddy, groaned Laura miserably. He found me this morning.
So?
He found me this morning, my face stuck to the sofa with dribble, wearing last night's smudged makeup and not much else, surrounded by empty bottles and two glasses. Two, Sarah! He'll think Graham came in for coffee.
Well, however compelling the evidence might be, it is purely circumstantial. And anyway, what does it matter what Freddy thinks?
He'll think I'm a drunken harlot.
Sarah smiled and spoke gently and slowly, as though to a small child.
Well, if it matters that much, tell him what really happened.
Laura sighed despondently.
Then he'll think I am just a dried-up, scruffy old bag lady.
Right. Sarah slapped the palms of her hands down on the table. Enough of this moaning and wallowing. Upstairs, bag lady, and make yourself look presentable. After you've dragged me away from work to listen to your pathetic and tedious complaining, the least you can do is take me out to lunch. And I don't just mean a sandwich, I mean a proper hot meal. And a pudding. Laura clipped the top of Sarah's head playfully as she passed her on the way out of the kitchen, mussing up her perfect cut and blow dry. Almost immediately, Freddy came in the back door. Sarah stood up and offered him her hand and her brightest smile. Hello again. I'm afraid I didn't introduce myself properly. I'm Sarah Trevay, an old friend of Laura's. Freddy shook her hand but refused to meet her gaze, turning instead to the sink to fill the kettle.
Freddy, I've just come in to make a coffee. Can I get you one?
No, thanks. We're just going out. The silence, deliberate on Sarah's part and embarrassed on Freddy's, was broken only by the rattle of water boiling in the kettle. Looking everywhere but at Sarah, Freddy caught sight of Laura's dress, hanging out of the bin. He fished it out and held it up.
Nice dress.
Yes, I bet Laura looked absolutely gorgeous in it.
Freddy shifted uncomfortably in his muddy boots.
I wouldn't know.
At the sound of Laura's footsteps coming down the stairs, Sarah stood up.
I know it's probably none of my business, but sometimes someone has to say something, even if they're the wrong person to do it. Last night, it wasn't what it seemed.
She turned to leave the kitchen and over her shoulder added, just in case you're interested.
None of my business either,
Freddy muttered sulkily as he poured boiling water into his mug.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. Thought Sarah.
The Moon Is Missing was hosting a wake for a 92-year-old former boxing coach and horse dealer called Eddie the Neddy O'Regan. The mourners had clearly been toasting the dear departed enthusiastically for some time already, and the mood was cheerful, rowdy, and sentimental. Laura and Sarah managed to squeeze into one of the booths, and over saucisse cassoulet and pureed potato, washed down with a glass of house red for Sarah and a Diet Coke for Laura, they caught up with each other's news. They had spoken briefly after Anthony died, but since then Sarah had been working on an important case that had only just been heard in court.
Did you win?
Laura asked.
Of course, said Sarah, poking with her fork at the rather mushy-looking sausage and bean stew on the plate in front of her. But never mind about that. Tell me everything.
Laura did. She told her about Anthony's will and the letter, the study full of things, hiding from sunshine, and being the latest and juiciest subject of local gossip. And Felicity.
I mean, it's lovely in one way. The house is beautiful. But the monumental lost property department that comes with it is another matter entirely. How the hell am I supposed to return all that stuff? It's madness. I have no idea what to do about sunshine. There's no guarantee that the website will work, and most of the locals think I'm a money-grabbing slapper. I'll end up living in a house full of mice and cobwebs and other people's lost property until I'm 104. And when I do die, it'll be months before anyone notices, and by the time they break in and find me, I'll be liquefying on the sofa.
And not for the first time, Sarah replied with a wink. But then she put down her knife and fork and pushed away her plate.
Laura, my dear, lovely, funny, clever, absolutely bloody infuriating Laura. You've been left a great, big, beautiful house full of treasures with a dishy gardener thrown in. Anthony loved you like a daughter and trusted you with everything that was precious to him. And instead of turning cartwheels, you sit here whinging. He believed in you. I've always believed in you. It's not just sunshine that you're hiding from. It's everything. And it's time to stop hiding and start kicking life up the arse. And to hell with what anyone else thinks, she added for good measure. Laura took a sip of her Diet Coke. She wasn't convinced, and she was terrified of disappointing yet another person who loved her. Sarah looked into her dearest friend's troubled face. She reached over and placed her hand over Laura's. It was time for some long overdue home truths. Laura, you have to let go of the past. You deserve to be happy, but you have to make it happen yourself. It's down to you. You were 17 when you met Vince, still a child, but you're a grown woman now, so start behaving like one. Don't keep punishing yourself for things you did then, but don't use them as an excuse either. You have a chance now to make a really good life. Grab it by the balls and get on with it. Sarah sat back to see what impact her words were having. She was probably the only person in the world who could and would talk to Laura like that. She was determined to find the woman whom she knew was still in there and get her out, by force if necessary. You do realise that we all fancied Vince back then. Laura looked at her incredulously. Seriously, it wasn't just you. He was handsome, drove a flash car and smoked Sobranis. What more could a girl ask for? We all thought he was sex on legs. It was just bad luck that he chose you. Laura smiled. You always were an insufferable clever clogs. Yes, but I'm right. Aren't I? Come on, Laura. You're better than this. When did you turn into such a wimp? This is a once-in-a-lifetime 24-carat gold fuck-off fantastic opportunity that most people can only dream about. If you chicken out of this one, I'll never forgive you. But more importantly, you'll never forgive yourself. Sarah raised her glass in a toast. And as for it being madness, well, that should suit you perfectly. You always were a complete loony tune. Laura smiled. It had been Sarah's nickname for her all those years ago at school, when life had still been exciting and full of possibilities. You complete arse, she muttered. I beg your pardon? Even the normally imperturbable Sarah looked a little shocked. Laura grinned. Me, not you. I knew that. Sarah grinned back at her. It was slowly dawning on Laura that life was still exciting and full of possibilities. Possibilities that she had wasted years of her life wishing for instead of chasing. She had some serious catching up to do. What about sunshine? She asked. Any advice? Talk to her. She has Down syndrome. She's not daft. Tell her how you feel. Work something out. And while you're at it, tell her what really happened on your date. If you won't tell Freddy, I'm pretty sure she will. Laura shook her head. Maybe. But he doesn't care anyway. You heard what he said when you suggested that we'd been up to no good in the pantry. Not a chance.
Oh, Laura. Sometimes you can be really thick.
Laura resisted the urge to stab her in the back of her hand with a fork.
Do you remember Nicholas Barker from the boys' school?
Laura remembered a tall, freckled boy with strong arms and scuffed shoes. He was always pulling my hair on the bus or ignoring me completely.
Sarah grinned. He was shy. He did it because he fancied you.
Laura groaned. Oh, God. Don't say we're no further forward than we were in the fifth form.
You speak for yourself. But in my opinion, you've definitely got some serious ground to make up, especially if you fancy Freddy as much as he obviously fancies you. And now I want some pudding.
Sarah called a taxi from the pub to take her back to the station. As they stood waiting in the car park for it to arrive, Laura hugged her friend gratefully.
Thanks so much for coming. I'm sorry I've been such a pain.
No change there, quipped Sarah. But seriously, it's fine. You'd do the same for me.
Damn well wouldn't.
That was Laura, always hiding behind a joke, shrugging away compliments. But Sarah would never forget that it was this Laura, 8 years ago, who'd sat wiping away her tears in a side room of a hospital ward, while Sarah's shattered husband paced the car park, chain-smoking and sobbing. It was Laura who'd held her hand while she delivered her first child, a precious daughter, who died before they had a chance to meet. A daughter who would have been christened Laura Jane. Later that afternoon, Laura went and found Sunshine, who was sitting on the bench across the green from the house.
May I sit down? She asked.
Sunshine smiled, a warm, welcoming smile which filled Laura with guilt and shame.
I want to apologize, she said.
What for?
For not being a good friend back to you.
Sunshine thought for a moment.
Do you like me?
Yes, I do, very much.
Then why do you hide? She asked sadly.
Laura sighed.
Because, Sunshine, this is all new to me. Living in this house, the lost things, trying to do what Anthony would have wanted. Sometimes I get cross and muddled, and I need to be by myself.
So why didn't you just tell me?
Laura smiled at her.
Because sometimes I'm just a silly ass.
Do you ever get scared?
Sometimes, yes.
Sunshine took her hand and squeezed it in her own. Her soft, chubby fingers were freezing. Laura pulled her up from the bench.
Let's go and have the lovely cup of tea, she said.
Chapter 26.
I think he needs the biscuit, said Sunshine, tenderly stroking the bundle of fur and bones that ought to have been a lurcher.
He watched her with frightened eyes that mirrored the beatings he had endured. Tired of their torture, his tormentors had kicked him out to fend for himself. Freddy had found him the previous evening lying on the grass verge outside Padua. It was raining hard, and he was soaking wet and too exhausted to resist when Freddy had picked him up and brought him inside. He had been clipped by a car and had a superficial wound on his rump that Laura had cleaned and dressed while Freddy had held him, shaking and wrapped in a towel. He refused to eat anything but drank a little water, and Laura stayed up with him all night, sleeping fitfully in an armchair while the dog lay inches from the fire, wrapped in a blanket and never moving. As the first wraith-like light of the winter dawn seeped through the lace panels of Anthony's study, Laura stirred. Her neck was cricked, and complaining after a night spent folded awkwardly into a chair. The fire was reduced to a few struggling embers, but the dog hadn't moved.
Please God, she thought, as she leaned forward to check for the rise and fall of the blanket that would prove her prayer had been answered. Nothing. No movement. No sound. But before the tears that had filled her eyes could spill, the blanket suddenly twitched. There was a ragged intake of breath, and the sonorous snoring that Laura had somehow managed to sleep through resumed. Sunshine had been ecstatic when she had arrived that morning to find that they had a canine guest. It was the most animated that Laura had ever seen the normally rather solemn and serious girl. Between them, they had coaxed him to eat a little cooked chicken and a slice of bread and butter. Sunshine had gently examined his skeletal frame and was determined to feed him everything she could. "We mustn't feed him too much at once. His stomach will have shrunk, and if we overdo it, he'll be sick," Laura warned. Sunshine pulled a face, which admirably communicated her disapproval of vomit.
"Maybe he needs another drink," she suggested hopefully.
Laura could understand her eagerness. She was desperate to do something to make the creature better, fatter, fitter, happy. But sometimes not doing anything was what was needed, however hard that might be. "I think he just needs to rest," she told Sunshine. "Just tuck the blanket round him and leave him in peace for a bit." Sunshine tucked him in very carefully for about 10 minutes before Laura finally persuaded her to come and help with the website. Freddy arrived earlier than usual and found them all in the study.
"How's the poor fella doing?"
Laura couldn't bring herself to look up from the screen. "A bit better, I think." Since the episode in the pantry, the awkwardness between Freddy and Laura hung between them like smoke. Laura was desperate to clear the air and tell him what had really happened on her date, but somehow she could never find a way to begin the conversation. He went over to the fire and crouched down by the blanket. A pair of large, sorrowful eyes peered out at him. Freddy offered the back of his hand for the dog to smell, but the dog's flinch was instinctive, born from bitter experience.
"Hey, hey, steady lad. No one's going to hurt you here. I'm the one who found you."
The dog listened to his gentle voice and poked his nose out warily from beneath the blanket to take a tentative sniff. Sunshine was watching their exchange closely. With an exaggerated sigh, she placed both hands on her hips.
"He's supposed to be resting," she said in a censorious tone.
Freddy held his hands up in surrender and came over to the table where Laura was in front of the laptop.
"So, are you going to keep him?"
Sunshine replied before Laura could draw breath.
"That's for double damn sure. Cross my heart and learn to fly. We're going to keep him. He was lost and you found him. That's what we do," she said, throwing her hands up in the air to underline and embolden her words.
It took a little while for her thinking to catch up with her feelings, but when it did, she added defiantly,
"But we're not giving him back."
She looked to Freddy and Laura in turn for reassurance. Freddy winked at her and smiled.
"Don't worry, Sunshine. I don't think there's anyone to want him back."
But then he added, as though remembering his place,
"Of course, it's Laura's decision."
Laura looked across at the blanketed bundle, still roasting by the fire, who was unaware that as soon as he had been carried over her threshold, he was safe. From that moment, he'd been hers. "We'll have to give him a name," she said. Once again, Sunshine was already on the next page.
"He's called Carrot."
"Is that so?" said Freddy. "And that's because..."
"Because he was hit by the car in the dark night. Because he didn't see it."
"And,"
continued Freddy with an interrogative tip of his head,
"carrots help you see in the darkness."
Sunshine delivered her denouement, speaking loudly and slowly, like an English tourist in a foreign country. After the lovely cup of tea, which Sunshine permitted Laura to make while she stood guard over Carrot, Freddy went outside to work in the garden, and Laura and Sunshine returned their attention to the Keeper of Lost Things. Laura had begun the Herculean task of entering the details of all the lost things onto a database that could be accessed via the website. Sunshine was selecting things from the shelves and drawers.
Once Laura had entered the details of a particular object, it was marked with a sticky gold star that came in packets of 50 from the post office. They had bought 10 packets, but now that they had made a start, Laura had a feeling they might need a good few more. Sunshine placed the objects in a neat line on the table. A pair of tweezers, a miniature playing card, the King of Clubs, and a plastic model soldier. The friendship bracelet remained in her hand.
Knotted thread red and black bracelet, found in the underpass between Fool's Green and Maitland Road, 21st of May. Chloe felt her mouth water just before the first wave of vomit rose. The retching bent her double as she tried not to splash her new shoes. The concrete walls of the underpass reverberated with the sound of her shame and humiliation. Everyone liked Mr. Mitchell. He was the coolest teacher in school. "The boys want to be him and the girls want to be with him," her friend Claire had chanted only yesterday, when he had passed them in the corridor. Chloe didn't. Not any more. She wanted to be anywhere other than with him. "Mr. Mitchell..." "Call me Mitch. I won't tell if you don't." Mr. Mitchell taught music, and at first she, too, would have danced to any tune he chose to play. He had the inestimable gift of plausibility. Coupled with a handsome face and slick charm, the adoration of Mr. Mitchell was inevitable. Chloe had begged her mother for the private singing lessons she knew Mr. Mitchell taught, from his home. Her mother was surprised. Her daughter was a quiet girl, happy to blend in with the chorus rather than take centre stage. She was a good girl, a nice girl. Money for singing lessons would be hard to come by, but perhaps her mother thought that they would be worth it if they gave Chloe a little more confidence. And Mr. Mitchell was such a brilliant teacher. He really seemed to care about his pupils. Not like some of them at the school, who simply put in the hours, took the money and ran. At first, it had been exciting. The eye contact held just a little too long in class. The smile flashed in her direction. She was special to him, she was sure. On the way to that first singing lesson, she was giddy with nerves. As she walked to his house, she rubbed gloss onto her lips, pink and shiny. Passionate pout. And then she had rubbed it off again. During the third lesson, he had made her sit next to him at the piano. His hand on her thigh was thrilling, arousing, but wrong. It was like taking a shortcut down a dark alley late at night. You knew you shouldn't. You know it's dangerous, but maybe just this once it would be all right. The next time he stood behind her and placed his hands on her chest, gently, caressingly. He said he needed to check that she was breathing correctly. The childish fantasy of romance had been rudely replaced by the sordid reality of his groping hands and hot, ragged breath in her ear. So why had she gone back? Even after that, she had still gone back. How could she not? What would she tell her mother? She wanted it as much as he did. That's what he had told her. And she was shackled by the precarious truth in his words. She had at first, hadn't she? The physical pain still echoed through her body, amplified by the action replays running through her mind. She had said no. She had screamed no. But perhaps just inside her head, and not out loud. The body which had been hers alone was lost forever. Taken or given, she still wasn't sure. She wiped her mouth again, and as she did, the friendship bracelet caught her eye. He had given it to her at the end of the first lesson, because, he said, they were going to be very special friends. She ripped it from her wrist and threw it away. Taken. Now she was sure.
Sunshine squeezed the bracelet tight in her hand. Laura didn't see her wince. Her eyes were intent on the screen in front of her, her fingers rattling over the keyboard. Sunshine raised one warning finger to her lips for the benefit of Carrot and threw the bracelet onto the fire. She went back to the drawers to choose more things. High on its shelf, the biscuit tin was still waiting for its gold star. Chapter 27
"Shall I make the lovely cup of tea when the bored van man comes?" Sunshine inquired helpfully.
Laura nodded distractedly, her mind preoccupied with where they were going to put the enormous Christmas tree that was currently languishing prone and prickly on most of the hall floor. Freddy was insisting that according to his measurements there would be a foot of clear daylight between the top of the tree and the ceiling once they had got it into position, and had gone to fetch the metal stand from the shed in order to prove his point before a full-scale argument broke out. Later that morning they were expecting a man who was coming to sort out broadband.
"We can't give you an exact time,"
the customer services woman had told Laura,
"but we can give you a window of between 10:39 a.m. and 3:14 p.m.
Sunshine had her eye on the clock in the hall, or at least as much of it as she could see beyond the branches. Laura had finally taught Sunshine to tell the time, more or less, and doing so at every opportunity had become her latest obsession. Curious about all the commotion, Carrot had left his comfortable bed by the fire to make tentative investigations. One brief glance at the forestry lurking in the hallway was enough to send him scurrying back to the study. Freddy returned with the stand, and having decided that perhaps the hall was the best place to accommodate both the prodigious height and girth of the tree, he and Laura were trying to manoeuvre it into position under Sunshine's rather erratic guidance when the doorbell rang, and Sunshine skipped off to answer it, leaving Freddy and Laura in an awkward embrace with a giant conifer. The man waiting on the doorstep had an air of superiority entirely unjustified by rank, appearance, education, or ability. He was, in short, a supercilious git. A short supercilious git. Sunshine didn't know that yet, but she could feel it.
"Are you the board van man?"
she inquired cautiously. The man ignored her question.
"I'm here to see Laura."
Sunshine checked her watch.
"You're too early. It's only 10 o'clock. Your window doesn't open yet."
The man looked at her the way the other kids had looked at her at school when they had called her names and pushed and shoved her in the playground.
"What the hell are you drivelling on about? I just want to see Laura."
He pushed past her into the hall, where Laura and Freddy were still grappling with the tree. Sunshine followed him in, clearly upset.
"It's the board van man," she announced. "And he's not very nice."
Laura let go of the tree. Caught unawares, Freddy was almost toppled by its weight and let it fall. It missed the intruder by inches, causing him to yell angrily,
"Jesus Christ, Laura, what the bloody hell are you trying to do? Kill me?"
Laura faced him as she had never done before, with steady eyes and a steely composure. Now there's a thought. The man was clearly not expecting this new version of Laura, and she appeared to be enjoying his discomfort. Freddy was intrigued by this unexpected turn of events, but trying hard to feign indifference, and Sunshine was wondering how it was that, if Laura actually knew the bored van man, she had asked him to come to Padua when he was so horrid, and she certainly wasn't going to make him the lovely cup of tea. Laura finally broke up the tense tableau.
"What do you want, Vince?" she sighed. "You'd better come through to the kitchen."
As he followed her out of the hall, he was unable to resist giving Freddy the once-over, and Freddy returned his gaze with a hard stare. In the kitchen, Laura didn't offer him anything other than a brief opportunity to explain his presence.
"Don't I even get a cup of tea?"
he asked in a wheedling tone she'd heard him use so frequently in the bedroom when they were first married and it wasn't tea he had wanted. She shuddered at the thought. No doubt Selina from servicing was horribly familiar with it too by now. She almost felt sorry for her. "Vince, why are you here? And what is it that you want?" He flashed her a smile, intending seductive but executing sleazy.
I want us to be friends. Laura laughed out loud. I do, he continued, desperation beginning to wet the very edges of his words. What about Selina? He sat down and buried his head in his hands. It was so hammy that Laura was tempted to offer him the mustard.
We broke up. I could never love her the way I loved you.
Lucky her. She left you, didn't she? Vince wasn't ready to give up just yet.
Look, Laura, I never stopped loving you.
What, even while you were servicing Selina?
Vince stood up and tried to take her hand.
It was just a physical thing, just sex. I never stopped thinking about you, missing you and wanting you back.
Laura shook her head in weary disbelief.
So isn't it strange that you never thought to contact me before now? Not a birthday card, a Christmas card, a phone call? Tell me, Vince, why is that? Why now? Nothing to do with this big house that I happen to have inherited, I suppose?
Vince sat back down, trying to marshal a coherent argument. Laura had always been too clever for him, even when she was just a girl. He had loved her then, in his own way, even though he knew that really she was out of his league, with her posh education and nice manners. Back then, though, he could still find ways to impress her. Perhaps if their baby had lived, or they had managed to conceive again, things might have been different. He would have liked a son to play football with, or a little girl to take horse riding. But it wasn't to be, and in the end, their fruitless efforts to become parents became another of the things that drove them apart. Over the years, as Laura grew up, she became more of a match for him, and so less of a match, in the marital sense. She noticed his faults, and he, in turn, exaggerated them to annoy her. It was his only defence. At least Selina hadn't minded his elbows on the table or the toilet seat left up. Well, not at first. Laura was still waiting calmly for his response. Her composure infuriated him, and the mask of civility finally fell from his face, revealing the ugly truth.
I heard about your date with Graham. You always were a frigid bitch, he spat at her.
Before he came, he had promised himself that he would not lose his temper. He would show Miss Snooty Pants that he was as good as her. But, as usual, she rattled him just by being herself, by being better than him. Laura had finally had enough. She picked up the nearest thing to hand, an open carton of milk, which, as luck would have it, was on the turn, and hurled the contents at Vince's sneering face. She missed, but hit him squarely on the chest, splashing the rancid liquid all over his designer polo shirt and staining the dark suede of his expensive jacket. Laura was just looking round for further ammunition when the kitchen door opened. It was Freddy.
Is everything okay?
She rather reluctantly replaced the bottle of washing-up liquid on the draining board with a resounding thump.
Yes, everything's fine. Vince is just leaving, aren't you?
Vince barged past Freddy into the hall where Sunshine was hovering uncertainly. He turned to Laura in order to deliver his final insult with appropriate aplomb.
I hope you'll be very happy in your big house with your little retard friend and your toy boy.
Sunshine, no longer the child in the playground, answered him with admirable poise.
I'm not the retard. I'm Dancing Drome.
Freddy continued with rather more menace.
And nobody talks to my girls like that. So sod off and don't come back.
Vince had never known when to keep his mouth shut.
Or else what?
Seconds after the answer was delivered, Vince was nursing a bloody nose, lying on his back and struggling to extricate himself from the spiny clutches of the Christmas tree. When he finally managed to scramble to his feet, he lunged at the front door, claiming grievous bodily harm and threatening to summon the police and his solicitor. As he slammed out of the house, Carrot's head appeared from behind the study door, and he barked just once, but very sternly, at Vince's vapour trail. The three of them stared at the dog in astonishment. It was his first bark since coming to Padua.
Well done, fella,
said Freddy, reaching down to stroke Carrot's ears.
That certainly saw him off.
The sound of the doorbell sent Carrot scuttling back to the study. Freddy charged across the hall and flung open the door to find a rather startled-looking young man with a plastic identity card strung around his neck and holding a black tool case.
"I'm Lee," he said, flashing his card. "I've come to sort out your broadband."
Freddy stood aside to let him in, and Laura guided him round the still-prone Christmas tree and through to the study, which was immediately vacated by a supersonic Carrot. Sunshine trotted along behind them, thinking with all her might and still trying to work out exactly what was happening. Eventually, she rolled her eyes and sighed loudly.
"You're the board van man," she checked her watch. "You came in the window."
Lee smiled, uncertain what to say. He'd been to some strange jobs before, and this one was shaping up nicely to be right up there with them.
"Shall I make you the lovely cup of tea?"
The young man's smile broadened. Maybe things were looking up.
"I'd love a cup of coffee, if that's okay."
Sunshine shook her head.
"I don't do coffee. I only do tea."
Lee snapped open his tool case. It might be better to just get the job done and get out after all. "Of course you can have coffee," Laura intervened hastily. "How do you take it? Come on, Sunshine, I'll make it and you can watch, and then next time you'll know how to make it yourself." Sunshine considered for a moment, and remembering Vince's threats, she allowed herself to be persuaded.
"Then when the police get here, I'll be able to make them the lovely cup of coffee too."
Chapter 28. The very thought of you.
The song broke Laura's sleep, although whether it was part of her dream or real music coming from the garden room downstairs, she couldn't be sure. She lay still and listening, snuggled in her duvet cocoon. Silence. Reluctantly, she crept out into the cold, rose-scented air, threw on her dressing gown and went over to the window to let the winter morning in, and saw a ghost. Laura peered out through the frosted pane, unwilling to trust what she saw. A shadow? Perhaps a figure? Pellucid as the rimy spider-web strung trembling in the icy breeze between the rose bushes. Laura shook her head. It was nothing. Customary common sense was temporarily out of service, and her imagination had cut loose, rampaging through reason with party poppers and a silly hat. That was all it was. Vince's visit had unsettled her. He had stomped dirty footprints all over her nice new life. But he was gone now, she told herself, and unlikely to return. She smiled, remembering with satisfaction the sour milk soaking into his shirt and the horror on his face as he squirmed like an upturned tortoise in the branches of the Christmas tree. But perhaps something else had unsettled her too. Freddy. He had called her his girl. She had been ridiculously, dangerously flattered. She had replayed the moment over and over in her head, but it was persistently and annoyingly accompanied by a warning voice telling her not to be so stupid. Now she didn't dare think about it at all. Time for the lovely cup of tea. Downstairs, the smell of Christmas tree cut through the air in every room. It was wonderful. The tree itself glittered and sparkled with tinsel and baubles and all manner of decorations that Laura had found in a box in the loft. Anthony had always put up a tree at Christmas, but his had usually been a much more modest affair, and most of the decorations had hardly ever been used. Laura slotted two slices of bread into the toaster and poured herself a cup of tea. Noises in the kitchen had finally roused Carrot from his bed by the fire in the study, and he came and sat at Laura's feet, waiting for his breakfast of toast and lightly scrambled eggs. In spite of their best efforts to fatten him up, he had barely thickened his skin, according to Freddy. But he did look much happier now, and was beginning to view life as a curious adventure, rather than a terrifying ordeal. Today, Sunshine was going Christmas shopping with her mum, and Freddy was visiting his sister and her family in Slough. He had told Laura that his pre-Christmas visit was enough to keep his
Good Big Brother certificate up to date, provided it was supplemented with generous, preferably cash, presents for his ungrateful niece and his surly nephew. Laura drained her teacup and brushed crumbs of toast from her fingers. Perhaps a day spent in her own company would do her good. Besides, she had Carrot, whose gentle head was resting in her lap. After a quick stroll around the frosty garden, which allowed Carrot to cock his leg up several trees, and Laura to check that there were no spectres, wraiths, or banshees loitering in the rose garden, she stoked up the fire in the study, and Carrot settled himself back into his bed with a contented sigh. She fetched a box from one of the shelves and set out its contents on the table. The laptop bleeped and blinked into life, and the vast virtual lost property department, of which she was now the keeper, opened its doors. Laura picked up the first object in front of her.
Child's umbrella, white with red hearts. Found at the Alice in Wonderland sculpture, Central Park, New York, the 17th of April. Marvin liked to keep busy. It stopped the bad thoughts creeping into his head, like black ants seething over the body of a dead songbird. The drugs from his doctor sometimes helped, but not always. When he had first fallen sick, he used to stuff his ears with cotton wads, hold his nose and keep his eyes and mouth clenched shut. He figured that if all the holes in his head were blocked, the thoughts couldn't get in. But he had to breathe. And no matter how teeny-tiny he made the crack between his lips, the bad thoughts always managed to sneak in. But keeping very busy kept them away. And the voices, too. Marvin was the umbrella man. He would take all the broken umbrellas that were thrown in the trash at the New York City Transit Lost Property Unit and fix them up back in the dark and dingy room that was his only home. It wasn't raining yet, but it was forecast. Marvin loved the rain. It washed the world clean and made everything shine, made the grass smell like heaven. Clouds, the colour of gunsmoke, rolled in across the blue sky above. It wouldn't be long. Marvin was a giant of a man. He strode along Fifth Avenue, his heavy boots thudding on the sidewalk, and his long grey coat billowing behind him like a cloak. His wild black dreadlocks were frosted with grey, and his eyes were never still, flashing whites like a frightened mustang. Free umbrellas! Central Park was his favourite place to work. He took the entrance on 72nd Street and headed for Conservatory Water. He liked to watch the pond yachts gliding across the water like swans. The boating season had only just begun, and despite the threat of rain, a sizable fleet had already set sail. Marvin's regular pitch was by the Alice in Wonderland sculpture. The children who played there didn't seem to mind him like some of the grown-ups did. Maybe they thought he looked like something out of a story, too. There were no children today. Marvin set his bag of umbrellas down by the smallest mushroom on the sculpture, just as the first spots of rain began to polka dot its smooth bronze cap. Free umbrellas! His deep voice boomed like thunder through the rain. People scurried past but looked away when he offered them one of his gifts. He could never figure it out. He was just trying to be a good person. The umbrellas were free. Why did most people scaredy-cat away from him, like he was the devil? Still, he stood his ground. Free umbrellas! A young guy on a skateboard skidded to a halt in front of him. Sopping wet in just a T-shirt, jeans and baseball boots, he was still grinning like the Cheshire Cat, peeping over Alice's shoulder. He took the umbrella that Marvin was offering and high-fived his gratitude. Thanks, dude! He sped away, his board splashing through the puddles, holding a huge pink umbrella aloft. The rain slowed to a drizzle, and the people in the park slowed to a stroll. Marvin didn't see her at first, a little girl in a red raincoat. She was missing one of her front teeth and had freckles across her nose. "Hello," she said. "I'm Alice, like the statue." She pointed to her namesake. Marvin hunkered down so he could see her better and offered her his hand. "I'm Marvin."